Well, hello everyone, welcome to Tech Talk. This is our live show where we help your business grow. My name is Phil Griffiths and this is...
Ginny.
And we're your hosts for today. Let's have start off. So first of all, guys, can you comment and let us know if you can hear and see us before we get onto the topic? Because today, I don't believe it. It's actually episode 121, and the episode name is One Foot in the Grave.
That's me.
And that's why I don't believe it. But there we go. So, again, guys, if you are watching, just let us know we're not talking to ourselves as usual. Otherwise, this is going to be a very short conversation. So, okay, David Mitchell saying that sound and visuals fine, and Facebook users can hear us loud and clear, and we got Amir saying hello, evening all, can hear and see, yeah, that's good, so that's good at least, so and congratulations on show 121. Thank you very much, Facebook user. If you are a Facebook user, can you click the link, or obviously if you want your name to be shown on the chat on the right-hand side. I'll put it in the screen yet again, but basically it's chat.restream.io/FB. That will allow your name to be shown so you won't be coming up as Facebook user. This is mainly for the people in the Tech for Techs Facebook groups or any groups. Unfortunately, Facebook asks for permissions, so you have to click the link and allow it if you want your name to be shown. Otherwise, I'm not going to be calling you by your name. You're going to be called Facebook user all the way through the show. Okay, so let's get on to the actual episode itself. So we do have another guest who's coming on in a few minutes, but we'll start off with Ben. So Ben, if you want to introduce yourselves, let everyone know who you are, what you do, and if you've got a tip or a story or any advice for us today.
Yeah, good evening, Phil. Good evening, Jenny. Yeah, Ben Ashcroft. I run Bugs and Bytes Computing in Sly Lincoln. That we refurbish laptops with the traders and to end users. Even PCs, gaming laptops as well. My tip of the day is probably to be on a TFT shoot, be on a TFT show. It's really good fun, actually. If you get stage fright, it's worth doing, just to overcome that. You never know who might be watching the shows either. Whether that be customers, suppliers, people you might deal with. So it's good for business exposure. Like I said, people get to meet who they're dealing with. I would think, I would say, business people buy people first. So, yeah.
Yep, totally good advice there, Ben. Obviously, guys, get yourself on a live show. Obviously, yeah. This live show is here for you guys. And if you guys aren't on it, then, well, it's going to be a bit of a boring show and a bit pointless.
So we had one guy come up to the Target, come to us at Target and say, you're always on the show. And I think Phil says, well, it is our show.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to just see our mugs, come on, take part.
That's it.
Good to have you.
It's free for you to join. Just let us know. Jen will be posting a list of topics in the future because we've got a few topics coming up that look interesting.
Yeah.
So Jen will be posting a list in the Tech for Tech Facebook group. If you're not viewing on Facebook and you're another platform, then, well, you should be able to know how to get hold of us by now. I'll put links up at the end of the show. And good timing. Ken has just logged in, so that's good timing.
Prince is with him.
No.
That's his way of being late, is to bring Prince home.
Yeah, so let me let Ken in.
Get out of jail.
So there you go, Ken. Good timing. I'll let you introduce yourself, Ken, if you've got any tips for today as well. You just timed it right for this bit. If you haven't got any tips, then I'm pretty sure you'll think of something in the last second.
I will do. Apologies for being late. Prince is here. He's just down here wanting his chews. Bear in mind, I've just driven 40 minutes at breakneck speed to rural Northumberland. So my tip for the day is don't get stopped for speeding like I did this morning.
Oh.
I did get away with it, though. I talked him round and I was fine.
Fantastic. And just for anyone who's unaware, Prince is his pet dog. He's not pointing at anything else down there, okay?
That's
people watching who have not seen before. So,
what but you watch when I'm not around?
But that dog, that over there, there is a dog there.
Oh, there he is.
Oh, that's the TFT mascot right there.
Yeah, he's... it's
nice one. Right, let's quickly go through chat before me and Jen go through our news. So let's have a look. So let me just start at the beginning. So we've got everyone who was saying hello earlier on, can hear and see us fine. That's brilliant. We've got Ian saying the same thing as well. Facebook user saying hello, another one saying hello. I've put the link on the screen for Facebook user. You can see it scrolling at the bottom in green. So you just basically just type that in. It's just chat chat.restream.io/FB. I should know by now. I've been saying it nonstop for about 3 years, but there we go. So we've also got someone saying that's not a Lincolnshire accent. I'm guessing that's to Ben. Definitely not. He's got an even better Lincolnshire accent when he's singing as well, I can tell you that.
Yes, he does. And he would walk 500 miles to tell you about it.
Yes, he would, that's for sure. And then another 500 as well, I bet.
I never know what meant.
Right. Amir, again, what do you think about the situation in Gaza? We don't talk about political stuff on this show. We keep to the topic. Obviously, everyone's got opinion. Obviously, anything that revolves around war, fighting, killing
is bad.
But that's pretty much as far as we go on that one, to be honest with you. There are proper places and situations for that. So, right. So let's have a look what else we've got in the chat. So... hello again, try again from Al Cook, I'm guessing. Oh, Ali Cook, sorry. I'm guessing that's Alison. And Mark shared the link as well in the chat. And also, Ben, apparently you need a new laptop because you hiss him.
Apparently so. I thought I knew you were to get one.
Yeah. I'm sure I know a few people who can supply you one.
I hear that Bugs and Bites has...
Is that in Africa?
I can get some nice refurbished ones at the moment from a decent supplier.
That sounds like a challenge.
There we go. What, a challenge to find a decent supplier, or
a challenge to try some vinyl laptops?
There we go. Right, okay. It's a bit of an inside joke there if people don't understand, but anyway, let's go to Jen next. Are you ready, Jen?
Yeah.
So, to introduce yourself and let everyone know your information for today.
Everybody knows me. I'm Jenny.
Yeah, it says it on the screen. Yeah, you're Jen.
Hi, everybody. I'm sort of like Mrs. Tech for Tex around here. And that's why I'm going to bring you this little comment that I have tonight. I've been talking to distributors about coming to TechMax. And so what I'm having to do now is put a deadline of the end of the month. This is not to say you can't sign up after the end of the month. This is just to say who's coming with you. And the reason I'm having to do this is I need to be pitching to vendors to come to TechMax. And I have stepped back so that I don't trot on your toes of who you bring into TechMax and cause confusion, because last year, I pitched to someone. They said, I thought I was coming with so-and-so. And I said, you are? This is the first I've heard about it. And they said, yeah, I'm sure I'm coming with them. And there was confusion and chaos. So what I'm doing is stepping back, letting the distributors, you know, pitch to the companies that they might want to sponsor with or do whatever with TechMax, and I'll give you to the end of the month to do that, and then I'm going to step forward and go full whammy pitching to the vendors as well. And whatever you do after that is fine. Like I said, it's not a deadline to sign up. It's a deadline to contact me and say, hey, I've got Bill, Bob, and Sue coming with me, you know, and so forth.
So basically a priority for the
distributors. Yeah, so... if you haven't gotten signed up for TechMax, though, it would be a really good time because we're in Q4 now.
Yep.
And I know the funds are starting to become available. If you need me to hold off on billing, I can do so. But you got to contact me first before we can work out anything. And you can contact me at info@techfortex.co.uk. Phil has that. You can just flash it up. We'll go from there. If you have my private email address, you can use that one. but the info is available here. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Right, okay, that sounds pretty good. Obviously, Jen's giving you the TechMax information. Again, if you haven't signed up to actually attend, please do, especially for the evening tickets, because they're getting a little bit low. But it's basically £1 to attend in the daytime. It is £25 for the evening, but with the evening, you do get food, drinks, and on top of that, you also get entertainment and awards as well, all for £25. So
you can't even go out to the pub for a meal for £25 in
it. That's it. And the main reason we're charging £25 rather than last year it was £2 is basically because quite a few people signed up for it and didn't attend the evening or went early. So we want to make sure that people are actually taking advantage of it and not leaving spaces what other people actually want.
And it costs to cater.
Yeah, a lot.
The food waste that we had last year was ridiculous.
There you go. So, yeah, so TechMax 2024, awesomeness. So, yes, that's Consumer Tech. He's saying hi as well.
Hello, Consumer Tech.
So, that's Will.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Will I Am is having issues with his personal computer, so he's working late.
That's totally fine. So, tip. I'm going to give you all a tip today rather than just going on about TechMax. If you have a customer who struggles to remember how to do things and you're fed up of cutting and pasting and writing instructions how to do things, believe it or not, Windows has something built in. It's called Step Recorder. You can basically just load it up, just use the search option at the bottom of Windows, you'll search for Step Recorder, and that will record all the steps of how to do something. It automatically, so you basically do what you want the customer to do. And it basically takes pictures, it records your voice, and then turns it into text, so you can then easily email them the instructions. You could potentially save it to a Word document, put it on their machine. You could also, and what I'd advise you to do, is potentially put a blog on your website or pages on your website with these instructions whenever you do them, and then you've got a page you can refer all your customers to with, like, guides and help how to do basic tools and tasks.
Oh, that's helpful.
So, yeah, so that's something what isn't there. I'm not sure if it's been, if anyone's mentioned on the show in the past before, but Step Recorder, I do forget about it myself now and again, but I have used it in the past with customers who generally forget how to change printer settings or doing simple tasks what... They generally forget.
You know, I've just thought of another use for it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say you're an accountant or something, and you have someone that you're trying to tell them how to do their accounts. You could use that to do the software with to show them how to do the
potentially as well.
Like my accountant, I'm pretty sure he pulls his hair out with me because I just do not get it on some of the things that he tries to tell me about. Don't get me wrong, I can do my books, but some things that he tries to tell me about, it just goes...
There we go.
But if you have something and you can show it to me, I absorb it a lot better. So, yeah, that might be something to suggest to him to put on for me. Yeah.
Yeah, so good one there. So, again, if anyone is interested in TechMax, just to let you know, there's a QR code at the top corner of the screen. You can just scan that on your phone and it'll take you to the website as well. I won't bore you with any more of that for now. We'll leave that for another week. So let's get on to the main topic. So the main topic is one foot in the grave. Should you repair, upgrade, or replace customers' laptops, PCs, or whatever? When is the right time to actually tell them, look, this thing is now a piece of rubbish, shall we say, and you need to replace it? And should you also sell refurbished stock, obviously?
Or weigh it out. Should you refer them to refurb or new even?
Yep.
What decision and how do you make it?
That's it. So we're going to talk about that today. So if anyone's got views in the chat, do you sell refurbished stuff? When do you know the right time? Do you have like put off? Like, let's just say you're not going to sell or repair any machines that are older than a certain, say, generation. Or do you just say, oh, I'm going to slap an SSD in and that's it, and bang, away you go. And you've got pretty much a brand new machine. And also, we've got things coming up what to consider as well, like deadlines, for example, end of life for Windows 10. And stuff which could obviously cause things to go. So I'm actually going to talk to Ken first. Sorry, Ben, because you're coming from a different angle. So we're going to get Ken on first. So Ken, I'm going to swap you around on the screen. Sorry, Ben. Ken, you're on top this time, okay? Oh, God, we get worse. Right, okay. So, Ken, what's your views? When should you repair, upgrade, or replace? What's your thoughts?
It depends on the customer, I think. And, I mean, we're probably unique where we do business customers at retail. But if we're talking retail, then it does genuinely depend on the customer. We might get an old woman with a laptop. Just come to Windows 7. We get quite a few telling us they do not want to upgrade, don't want to change from Windows 7, Windows 8. We advise them, but we can't make them. So it's a case of coming up with something for each customer. But we don't sell refurbished as such. So we kind of sell remanufactured rather than refurbished. So we all, you know, if cost is the issue, we'll point them down the remanufactured route. If money's no object, then we point them towards the new route. But we give them the end, the choice. We don't make it for them. We give them the options, point out the pitfalls, and let them make the choice themselves.
Okay, sounds pretty good. Just to clarify, what would you class as remanufactured against refurbished, just to make it clear for everyone?
So, refurbished to me is a machine that might have light signs of wear, green damage, with buttons with the writing enough, lip marks on the case. Remanufactured is stuff that has gone back to the manufacturer, gone through that process again, replaced any keys, refinished the lid, that kind of thing. So we've been getting some recently from a supplier who is known by everybody here, I think. We can't tell the difference between them and the new ones. We genuinely can't, and the offering government's guaranteed. So for the price difference, no bargain.
Yeah.
You know, they might not be the latest generation, but they do the job, and it depends on the audience. If it's somebody just wanting a bit of Zoom call, a bit of internet, a bit of proposing, there's nothing wrong with them. Nothing at all.
Okay, I suppose it depends on budgets as well. I'm guessing sort of like remanufactured sort of comes between that price of new and refurbished, doesn't it? So it's another level. So you could potentially do remanufactured and refurbished. Some people could if they wanted, depending on obviously what they're doing. So it's not a either or, you could do both.
I mean, I think all of the ones we've done over the last year have been from one particular supplier. We did have other suppliers, but the quality wasn't there. So we ended up standardizing and saying, look, you know, we can't guarantee the quality coming from some places. So we went direct to one of them, and that's where we go.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Some customers are that would come in our store were under the misconception that if I sold them a brand new laptop, I was making more on it than if I sold them a refurb, which... You couldn't have been further off, because the profit margin on a new laptop is very slim compared to a refurb. There's more profit to be made in refurbished technology. And sometimes that refurbished technology will get you just exactly where you need to be versus what's new on the shelf. So it's always down to what do you need from the laptop or desktop and your budget, and then come to a conclusion based on that. The offerings. Don't be afraid to shop around either. Don't just settle on one store. I used to tell my customers, you know, sure, go out there, have a look and see what's available. You know, go home, discuss it with your missus, have a cup of tea, then come back and let me know what you're selling.
Yeah, brilliant points there, to be honest with you, definitely. Also, again, this goes for chat. If chat wants to chime in on this, with refurbished stuff, do you actually buy it from someone? For example, Ben, we'll talk about, we'll obviously tell you about that in a few minutes. Or do you actually get stuff from your actual customers? So they trade in and then you refurbish it. And obviously there's different levels of refurbish. I think Richard Overfield just made a good point. Different suppliers use different grading on used equipment. One supplier is a grade A, can be another's grade C. Yeah, I must admit I have seen that in the past.
Yeah.
We bought some grade A stuff from somewhere once and there were scratches all over the lids and I was like, oh, well, that's acceptable because it's not on the... It was like, that ain't a great grade A. But there you go. So, but there is no general acceptance or level on that one. So definitely, let me just quickly go for the rest of the chat as well while we're here before we're going to Ben. So Mark says, I generally consider DDR3 laptops with SSDs usable for general office internet use. That rule seems to hold up once you go down the DDR2. It's usually too slow, and you get a lot of graphics cards that don't work with Windows 10, etc. Windows 11 is a different story, obviously. The old dual-core CPUs I find to be a bit too slow. What do you do with these really old ones? Do you send them off to a certain place for them to recycle them, or do you actually repurpose them and turn them into some sort of like Chromebook-style thing or put an alternative OS on them and sell them like that, or is it just too much messing about with when they are actually that old? And we've also got Consumer Tech saying the customer has a Lenovo broken hinges, screen, and plastics all broken, so... It jumped down there. So I'm recommending a refurb laptop. So hopefully Ben can supply not cost effective to repair. I can supply it to you. So yeah, that's pretty good as well. And obviously Richard's saying it all depends on the customer and what their budget is as well. So that's pretty good. And Carl's saying on site with a customer today, 50 minutes for the laptop to show the Wi-Fi networks. Refused to work on it for any further and suggested they come in store and look at a replacement. Yeah, I must admit, I've got to the points where you go around someone's and it's like, I used to hate this when I used to go to customers and they'll say, oh, I've got a problem with the laptop. It's really, really slow. And you're like, all right, okay, I go around to the house. And then it's like, oh, I left it off. So you could see how slow it was when it comes on. So then you got to wait like 45 minutes for the damn thing to start up. And it's like, oh, I'm just taking this.
It's like, thanks for thinking about me.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't you realize I'd have to sit here for 45 minutes to wait for the thing to come on? There's not much I can really do.
For this time, you know.
There's only so much you can use USB boot disks and diagnostics and in the BIOS. And if it's obviously a Windows issue, you need to get into it to do stuff. Obviously, yeah, the safe mode and stuff like that, but that's even more hassle than stuff now and again. So, right, okay, so I think that covers that. So let's move on to Ben. So, Ben, tell us your point of view on this subject. Obviously, you're going to have a slightly different take, maybe a little bit biased because of what you do. Give us your take on it, Ben.
So my short take on this is, at the moment, I need to sell refurbished tech, nothing but refurbished tech. I agree with a lot of the points that we made. Brand new versus refurbished, there's a lot more margin in refurbished tech than there is in brand new. I'm personally now getting rid of any stock that's older than 8th gen off my stock list. And once that's gone, it's gone. A lot of my customers are shops or businesses, and they want stuff that's compatible with Windows 11, that's 8th gen, you know. When customers bring the machine, then, like, I would anticipate a machine, for instance, if it's 7th gen or below, and it's still running a hard drive, and they bring it running slowly, I'll just say to them, look, you know, it's £134 for a 480 gig SSD, or it's going to be £200 for an 8th gen laptop that's already got an SSD drive in it. So it's a no-brainer, because more often than not, it's a machine that's old enough to be running a hard drive. It's going to be probably 4 or 5 years old. Probably you find, like, it needs a service, replace, but it's probably going to be pretty short on it as well, so... All that sort of stuff, you know. I'll usually push them more than your unit, although it's kind of the wise thought, isn't it? Because with the whole advent of Windows 11 or the Windows 10 end of life in 2 years' time, some folk are still hell-bent on keeping their old systems because they absolutely love them. It's like, that's fine. For the consumer side, consumer-facing side, it's like, I'd rather watch someone an SSD to the laptop, yeah, than 34 pounds, than they would sell the laptop for 200 pounds that Windows 11 can pop. They love it. I had a customer last week, she had a 4th-gen tower, and she absolutely loved this thing. I didn't want to get rid of it. I said, well, look, 2 years left for that, you'll have to upgrade it. And she was like, no, no, I want to keep it. So she was happy with that, you know. With regard to old machines, stuff that was on Windows 7 originally, they still have limited use, I have to say. I don't deal in any of that sort of stuff, but one of my colleagues, he repurposes them for car diagnostic. There's quite a lot of Windows 7 machines have serial ports. Car diagnostics need the serial ports or their computers.
Okay, good points there. Definitely, yeah, I must admit, I've come across similar things with Windows XP with manufacturing machines and stuff like that in the past, and the software doesn't work on anything newer than XP, and obviously you need the serial ports and stuff like that. So yeah, good points there. Let's quickly go to chat before I move over to Jen for her views. So let's have a look. So latest chat, okay. We already read that one. Going forward, I would hesitate to supply anything that won't run Windows 11. But if a customer is happy with what they have, then we'll upgrade RAM, SSD. Good point, David. And Richard is saying, they are paying for your time. As long as the cups of tea keep coming, all is good. Yeah, I suppose that's good. But obviously, if you've got your customers and you've got to sit there 3 hours just to boot the machine up, it could be a bit interesting. But yeah, if you've got enough time to do it and they're paying for it, then why not? So, and they're willing to pay for it. So I must agree there. So definitely a plus there. Right. Okay. So Jen, what's your views on this topic?
Well, mine's coming from a totally different perspective. Me as the technician and what I want to work with. Let's just say I've got this customer and she's bringing in this old clunker of a machine. And when I say clunker, I mean it has no battery. It can only be powered on by the mains. And it's seen better days. And I'm actually describing a customer. All right, really? And she would come in and she'd plunk it down and want me to make magic happen and make it faster because it was too slow. And I told her, I said, right, I can upgrade you to an SSD, see if it'll take some more RAM. That's about the best I can do, right? So I did that for her first. Well, this laptop, I wouldn't be scared to say was 10 years old. And if you know what I'm talking about, it was at least 10 years old. And I said, look, this has given you its life and then some. And I knew what a headache it was going to be to try and do anything else, if anything else could be done at all. And I said, right, here's what I have in store. I've got new laptops. And she says, oh, I don't know if I can deal with that. I like this one. Because the new and shiny and thin versus thick, you know, she was scared to touch it. No, just the looks of it just blew her mind. Oh, it's so thin. Oh, it's so lightweight. Oh, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to work with it. But right next to it, I had a refurbished laptop, similar spec. And it was a Lenovo ThinkPad. And you know how bulky those are. She loved that. She said, oh, I'll have this one. I'll know I'll be able to get along with it. Sold her that. I thought, all is well. All is well. I didn't see her for a little while. And she came back in. She says, I just wanted to tell you I love my new laptop, but my old one is broken down. And I thought, I said, you still got that? And she says, yeah. She says, I have to because my husband takes away the one that I just bought and plays games on it, and I have to have something. Can you repair it?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, And sometimes you have to call your shots on, just, can I be asked to do this anymore? I've already sold as much as I can for them to get what they can out of it. And let's be realistic. There comes a point when there's just nothing you can do anymore with a machine to make it go faster. So that's the way I used to call my shots. Have I done all I can do? And is it economically viable to sink money into?
Yeah, that's good points there. David's saying, for PC diagnostics on site, having a prop 2 hour cut off before it comes back to me for like a workshop fix sort of thing. Obviously, it's mentioning Windows 10 coming to its end of life. Is it actually in 2 years and 2 days, the end of life, for anyone who is unaware? So nearly 2 years to the day, Windows 10 will be coming end of life. So something to watch out for. What we usually find, doesn't always happen, but most of the time, is usually the closer it gets to that date, the demand for computers usually goes up. Supply sometimes dries up. And prices generally go up. That doesn't always happen, but generally most of the time it does. So there's always exceptions. Not as if prices aren't going up through the roof at the moment for a lot of things anyway. So that's just another thing to think about. And obviously, if you are supplying machines with Windows 10 on it with warranties, just bear that in mind, is you've only got 2 years. So I won't offer anything more than a 2 year warranty on it, because obviously it's going to be unsupported after that. So. But talking about that is, are you guys still selling Windows 10, anything with Windows 10 on, Ken or Ben?
We get customers, but when we go through the quote process, we use a custom PC builder for that. They don't have Windows 10 at the menu anymore. So we still get customers who say, I can't use Windows 11. I want Windows 10. And it's well, you know, it's the same price. It doesn't matter. We can still get a Windows 10 license. And I still, if I remember right, I think Windows 11 licenses can downgrade. So we still install the odd one with Windows 10. It's not very often. It's mainly the older people who go for that option. But it's always on hardware that can't support 11. So if we need to upgrade further down the line, then yes,
we can do it.
I don't understand that you can use 10 but not 11, because the only really noticeable thing is they've moved the start button.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
it's very similar, and I think it comes down to customers being trying to change.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a creature of habit as well, but
when we show them it, it does change their mind sometimes, because we use Windows 11.
To me, Windows 11 has a really fresh look about it, as opposed to the other operating system. It just, when you boot it up, it looks very clean, you know, and easy to work with.
I think it did until they decided to put Weather down one corner and where the start button was, which they got rid of because they didn't want anything down the bottom left-hand corner anymore and stuff like that. So the... They're like adding bits and bobs in sometimes, which is a bit of a pain. I generally turn most of those features off anyway.
I like my weather.
Yeah, but it's one of those things that if you look at your monitor over here, you've got the weather down the bottom left. The whole idea, they moved the start button away from the bottom left because they wanted it looking nice and clean. And then they went and put
the weather. About weather, because I'm too lazy to look out the window and see if it's raining.
Yeah.
You think?
It's raining.
I think the start button was sent to us more to make it look a bit like Mac OS.
What was that again, Ben?
He says it looks like a Mac OS.
Right, okay, yes, it does, I must admit. Sorry, you had a bit of static then again, Ben, sorry. But yes, I think it's one of those things, Windows does that a lot. They try and make things look more like a Mac now and again, and I think Mac copies ideas back as well, to be honest with you.
It's like cars, isn't it?
Yeah, you'll find one manufacturer does one, one works for the, does the other. And you'll find a lot of staff used to, who worked at Apple, then worked at Microsoft, and then vice versa. And you tend to find that all of these engineers, and it's the same with the graphics card companies and CPU companies and the stuff. And it's the same with vendors and distributors. All the staff just rotate around between each other. So the ideas at some point are going to get pretty similar, to be honest with you. Let me ask you this question. If someone came in with a Windows 7 laptop, PC, or even older potentially, would you still actually support or repair that, or would you refuse to actually work on a device of that age?
That's a difficult one. For us, we would look at it on a case-by-case, depending on the customer. If it was a business machine, it would be replaced, you know, regardless. We couldn't support it or guarantee anything. But I think if it was a regular retail customer and they were particularly attached to it for whatever reason, it would be on a, we would try our best basis. You know, we wouldn't be able to guarantee anything. We just start getting into repairing the older stuff. All sorts goes wrong. You know, we've got one in the shop at the minute. He brought it in, it wanted a new hard drive. He insisted. And I guess, okay, we'll try. And it turns out there's a fault on the motherboard. So that's just spoiled into a whole new mess. So I'm going back to it to say, look, you know, we did recommend a new one, and it has more problems than you initially thought it had. So it's now uneconomical for us and for him. So hopefully he'll be happy. And I mean, we get that regularly. So 9 times out of 10, they will go with our advice.
Yeah.
If we rule out all of the options for them, they'll generally go with our advice.
Yeah, I would do it on a case-by-case basis as well. I would first, but in a different way. Let's just say I pretty much knew that all it needed was a new electrical mains power supply. That's all it needed. Yeah. Quick fix, something like that. Yeah. Anything that I've got to take it apart for, I'm going to first advise you, first things first. I'm going to give you about a 25% chance of getting this thing fixed. But I do advise you either today or sometime in the future, get a new one. I hope you have everything backed up, because there is a very real chance that you don't have your data backed up. Things could go south, you know. And that's before I even touch it. Before I even touch it, they have to agree to that, sign on a dotted line. I've told them all that. And then look at it. And if it looks like it's not going to be very economical, viable for them, I'll call them up, quote them a price to fix it, and leave it to them if they want to pay it or not. If they do, happy days. If not, well, then come collect it. I'll put it back together. So.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's a difficult one. Personally, my view on that one is, unless the machine is for a specific task, like, for example, Richard saying that there's someone who's got a vinyl cutter and the new software is like 20K. I know I've got a customer who's got some special stuff on for doing metal work, and, well, I've actually got a couple that do, and they need machines that are running really old stuff, and another one who makes like pet food and they need a specific machine to run them, Windows, I think it's 98, to actually use the machinery. It's either that they've got to replace the whole of the machinery, which will cost them like $500,000. So unless it's for a specific tool, I generally won't support anything older than what is officially supported, because as Mark's saying, one of the problems you got is security updates. Obviously, it makes the machine vulnerable, should I say, due to obviously viruses, malware, hacking, stuff like that. Which obviously is something you've got to watch out for. And a lot of people will say, oh, yeah, you can get aftermarket security. But personally, I find obviously you're still sticking something on it was not supported.
There is one more reason I will support it. If it, like, let's just say that this belongs to someone that has either learning difficulties or dementia that, like you say, is very needing of this machine. If they just would freak out, not know where to go with anything else. I will support it as long as I can. And when I say support it, I mean as long as I can get the parts needed for it, I will help them with it and things like that. But I will always try, and when they come into the shop, show them what's new on the market And let's just say, you know, you never know. You might make that breakthrough that one day, oh, I would like to have one of those. And you say, you know, thank goodness, you know. But I would always try to help somebody that was vulnerable like that. And I would always advise the carer, if they had one, to make sure that they do as little online transactions as possible, you know, with banking and stuff, because it's not very secure.
Yeah. Some good points there. And generally, again, not to contradict Jen or anything, but if it's for a specific need, as I said, then that's something. But generally, I wouldn't necessarily support it, because I know what'll happen if something goes wrong. Let's just say Chrome stopped working or whatever, and I can't get on the internet because it's not being updated anymore. You know who they're going to blame. And it isn't going to be Google. It isn't going to be Microsoft. It's going to be you, because you repaired the computer 10 years ago. That's the basic rule to it. Mark's also saying, what about a virtual machine for specialist hardware, software? That is an option in some cases. Doesn't work for everything, but even more so doesn't work for everything if they need special connections, obviously, like serial ports and stuff like that. It's can also be an issue, and maybe the machine you're either using, the screens connect up with like a standard VGA cable, where obviously the new machines just don't come with that. Well, some do, but generally you will find that's getting less and less, especially if you've got a dedicated graphics card and so forth. But yeah, there are alternatives. But yeah, virtual machine, you can run obviously different things. So yes, definitely, as you said, you avoid a lot of vulnerabilities and stuff like that. Yeah, definitely good points there. It will work for some people, but not everything. Definitely good points there. Ken, have you got anything else you want to add while I quickly check through chat, see if we missed anything?
I think I'd probably pick up on what Mark said in the chat. We've used the Hyper-V stuff a lot for businesses where they need an older version of Windows for a specific task. We've recently been looking at a factory that had a lot of machinery, and it used some really old serial style connections to count. What it was, a plastic manufacturing company that made plastic things, and their machines were all controlled by one serial cable in the office. We found that out because I tripped over it initially, but never mind. The whole factory stopped, but never mind. Soon sorted that. It was blue an hour, but we ended up finding a new machine, Windows 11, bit of Hyper-V going on, Windows 8, I think that was. And we found a serial card in the machine. That took a bit of doing, but we eventually got it sorted. So that machine is completely air-gapped on the internet, everything now. It's just not connected to anything.
Yeah.
Backed up daily, just in case.
I'm going to say there are ways around stuff. The question is obviously if the customers are willing to go that way around stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times, a lot of them, we find that they don't have the software anymore to reinstall it or something daft like that. And then obviously that causes more issues as well. So
I think the worst offenders are accountants for us. We look after a fair few accountants, and one of them, I think he's got about 20 different versions of Sage. Because of all these various clients, they're all at different levels of upgrade, and it gets so complicated. There's one machine even I'm frightened to touch, because if it goes wrong, that's his whole business, you know. So we just do a full backup on it every single night, just in case. I don't want that matter of that one.
We used to have a customer come in. Well, I say a customer. It was a couple, and they were singers. And they relied on Windows, I want to say 95 laptop to run their DJ stuff. And you know, when they brought in that laptop and it said Windows 95, I thought it's some sort of trick. I thought, all right, somebody's going to jump out and say, this is your life. I got ready for the lights, camera, action, you know.
Yeah. I might be able to go one up on you there. We've got a customer with a lot of buildings that have got a Trend building management system installed.
Really?
Was that like light, not my kind of stuff? Windows 3.11.
Oh my!
Now you are coming old. That was like where I started. What kind of people in IT are first?
I was in my second year in business school when that came out. Yeah, I'm telling my age.
Yeah, someone's going to get calculated right now. I didn't. But definitely. Just to go back to something David said earlier on to bear in mind about Windows 10 and the upgrades. I think Richard and maybe Carl and David were talking about it. They were mentioning that obviously Windows 10 upgrades now are not officially possible. They've actually removed the ability to do it. But obviously you can go the other way around. You can install, obviously, with a Windows 11 license and downgrade it basically to 10. You can do it that way. But apparently, I've not tried it myself, so I'm not sure exactly what happens. You can't go the other way around. To be honest, I'm not sure if that would work if you've got an older version of Windows 11 on an ISO, which obviously isn't supported or whatever, if it would still activate or not, I don't know. Or if it's just for the latest ISO version, what they've got, I don't know how that would work.
I want to say that this happened once before when you had Windows ME. If you upgraded to Windows XP, you could upgrade, but you couldn't go back because of the partitioning of the hard drive. I want to say that was like that. Pretty sure.
I know when we do it, we sell a Windows 11 license, but we install Windows 10 from a boot server we've got in the office, from a Pixie server. We install that, we activate it using the Windows 11 key. And then if they ever do want to upgrade to Windows 11, it comes through the Windows update process and they'll get Windows 11.
Yeah, that's good then. Mark's going on about, let's have a look, where was it? Did see it a second ago. Not supported. Oh, yeah, so what I was going to say, he was going on about, my chat's gone everywhere. Okay, you mentioned a second ago about, I see it now. I bet it would only take 10 seconds to install Windows 3.1 on a modern machine. Actually, you're probably wrong, because if you've got it on floppy, you've got to get a floppy drive. Six disks, if I remember right, maybe seven for 3.1.
It's six disks, seven if you take the printer drivers.
There you go, then. So that's
I know.
Seven, so, yeah.
I've actually got them in my office.
Don't get me wrong, if you've got it all on an EXE file, which obviously you're probably not going to be able to run an EXE file for Windows 3.1, then it'll probably be okay, but floppy disk is going to be slowing you down.
Speaking of floppy, I had this machine, Windows 98, and so I went out and bought a Logitech mouse for it because the one that came with it was just kind of, so I bought this Logitech mouse, and the box that this mouse came in was huge, and I was like, why? Because you know how big a mouse is. I mean, even back then, it's not very big. And I looked in there, and there were 12 disks to install this Logitech mouse. I kid you not. I had to go to the library and get someone to get me some instructions because the instructions they sent were in the wrong language, and I couldn't figure it out. So I had to go to the library and get the librarian to get me the instructions and print them out. It took 3 days, including the library trip, to install the mouse. I kid you not.
It's crazy, to be honest with you, the amount of disks. I think even with Windows 95 and 8, if you got it on CD, if I remember right, you still had to have a floppy to put in and to run the DOS commands to tell it to then load the CD. To then install, and then you may have needed a BIOS disk as well from your motherboard to put the drivers in so Windows could find the drive or something.
On 95, on 98, you had a shell, I'm pretty sure. A DOS shell.
Yeah, something along that line. So, Oh yeah, Windows NT and so forth after.
Oh,
kind of people today don't probably won't even know what Windows NT is.
And I think I'm the only person that ever absolutely loved Windows ME.
Oh God, sorry. Of course, I
loved it.
Buggy as hell.
It was buggy, but I bought this book.
I didn't have much of an issue.
I bought this book in the bookstore. I was in Barnes & Noble one day in Dothan, Alabama, and they said, it said something about how to fix Windows ME and sort out bugs and stuff. And I opened it up, and as you do, you take your book over there and grab a coffee in Barnes & Noble and sit down, and you begin to read. And you think, you know, I'll just purchase this book and take it home with me. It'd be a lot easier. And I took it home, and daily I would go in there into my machine and see what else I could do to it. And by the time I was done with that book, the machine ran like a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute dream.
It's one of those things, if you know where your way around and how to set it up, the box for an average person, it could be a bit buggy, and the same with Windows Vista as well.
I hated Vista.
Another one, yeah.
Yeah. Now, we've got an office, a cupboard in the office. It's our software library, we'll call it. Almost every version of Windows is in there. I think starting Windows 3.11. Even the old offices, the old WordPerfect. Mm-hmm. Our apprentices and the young kids that work for them, they'll go in the cupboard, and the majority of that software is actually older than they are.
Mm-hmm.
I've got no idea what it is. I do get a bit sick of the questions sometimes, but it's good that they're taking interest.
I can remember when you could get a certification from WordPerfect. And when you showed that certification in an office interview, you know, like for clerical, that it was like having an extra, you know, bonus thing to have. And I got certified in WordPerfect, I want to say 8, WordPerfect 8. And you had a score. You had to score at least 75%. To get this. I mean, it wasn't just handed to you. It was something really stupid. And I think I scored 90 on it. And so, and I was really nail-biting through it. And another one to have was DBase and Lotus 1-2-3, which I had all three of those. And I went flashing it in. I thought, oh, I've got this. I got it in the bag. And whoever was interviewing me had not come along that far yet. They had not upgraded that far yet.
Excellent. I've got a relic here, which is usually behind me, but I don't know if you can see that, but that's Windows Vista, and it's the ultimate version. It's probably the only real ultimate version of it, because everyone else pirated the damn thing. With most Microsoft products, they're the only people who had the actual ultimate or the pro versions. It was usually pirated or the Enterprise.
Just to make this clear, we are not condoning piracy.
Yeah, so obviously that's why I've got the genuine version. So one day I might actually get the disc out and actually install it, but on something if I can. But yeah, proper disc. Well, yeah, I did at the time, but yeah, not many people.
I can't blame you for not.
It's even got quick start guide with it. Well, there you go. But there we go. Right, guys, I think we're pretty much coming to the end of the show. I'm just quickly check the chat. David saying that's the last one that fails. I'm presuming he means floppy disks there. And Richard saying, you almost had a punch-up with a customer once because he took offence to me telling him to buy the Windows for Dummies book. Yeah.
Well, there was an idiot's guide as well.
Yeah, they still do them, I think. But the problem is, if you ever look at those idiot guides, dummies guides, or whatever they are, you tend to find they're out of date when they're published, because Windows is that constant, especially nowadays, is constantly changing the features and stuff. It just doesn't make sense. In the olden days, shall we say, Windows 95, 98, and whatever, It was basically the same, unless they did a service pack. So you'd have that Windows 8.1 service 2 book or whatever.
Well, I found the wording in the dummies book and in the idiot's guides to be somewhat more hard to comprehend. Some of the words that they would use to tell you what to do, you'd be like, okay, I need the Webster's Dictionary now to figure out what you're trying to tell me. They just didn't put it in plain English. So sometimes the finding it out on your own, trial and error and all that, was just a lot better than those idiot guides. They had their place, I'm sure. I had one, but I think I gave it to my mother or something. It just didn't read well to me.
Well, that's I suppose it depends how you're reading, but a lot of the time the things change and the buttons is, for example, you go in Windows 11 settings now, it looks completely different to when Windows 11 came out, what was it, 2 years ago? Things have changed quite a bit in that time.
Before we end tonight, I've got a question for you two. When was the last time you had to use DOS commands?
Oh, that would be this morning. I was using a command shell to work out an IP address to see what network a customer's machine was on. I tend to do it the old-fashioned way rather than go through the Windows. It's faster.
Yeah.
I used DOS for years. DOS commands, DOS, anything. I've just not used it for years. Probably when I had a Windows 98 machine.
I guess it's just the ones that grew up with knowing the DOS commands, and I'm sure you remember the wild card even in DOS. Ken?
Never forget them, for sure.
No. They're needed sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I do a lot of work on Cisco switches and things, so you can't get used to command line, and I find it's faster. I mean, especially in Windows now, if you're trying to partition a hard drive or unpartition a hard drive, you can't do some of it in the Windows GUI.
Yeah.
You've got to use disk part. And a lot of the younger lads just don't know anything about it.
I'll never forget the CD for change directory and semicolon backslash and all that. I'll never forget all that. It's just, man, that seems like yesterday that I was using that.
Yeah, I must admit, obviously, what Ken says, I'm going to say, I think this part is probably one of the more common things I use, and to be honest with you, I've got one or two scripts I've got. This runs in PowerShell or CMD, doesn't really matter, to be honest with you, pretty much the same thing.
I think disk part, ping, traceroute, and IP config are the main ones I tend
Richard
to
Overfield
use.
Richard and Mark are saying they use them all the time.
Yeah, it depends on what you're doing and so forth. If you're dealing with a lot of consumer stuff, you probably don't use them as much as probably on a lot of business machines and stuff. But yeah, I'd hate to be anyone under the age of 20 having to suddenly have to use DOS commands or something like that.
The last job I had before I came over here, I had to know DOS because their machines were written in DOS. It was not a Windows-based system. The man that wrote it was ex-Marine, and he coded their machines in DOS. And it was just a good thing that when I came along, I had training in DOS, or else I would have been just absolutely stuck trying to figure out these machines.
That's it. Right, guys. Any last thoughts? Because we're going to call it a night. So, Ken, any last thoughts?
I think if you're talking to customers about potential upgrades before you see the machine, it's sometimes, you know, it's just being, it's take your time. Customers will never make a quick decision.
No.
So, it's being patient, I think.
Okay, good one there. What about yourself, Ben?
Just to say, I think it's a very strange market at the moment. Just going back to one thing you said earlier, Phil, about the prices and shop availability, you know, it's there's definitely a shortage of 8th-gen stock in the channels at the moment, because I think companies are becoming a lot more savvy. They're holding on to their newer units, going through budget cycles and that sort of thing. So
Yep, sounds pretty good. Mark's just saying, don't forget to check your microphone. Yeah, he's aware. Unfortunately, we were trying quite a few things before the show. You even taking the bezel off the front of his laptop while we were on the pre-show. So, all I can say is get yourself a spare microphone for backup, just in case in the future, or even a webcam that's got a microphone built in or something.
And for everybody that wants to donate money to buy him a Trust microphone on the car boots.
It's glad you didn't suck out a laptop.
I'm pretty sure he'll get it sorted. Right, okay, guys. Thanks again for everyone for tuning in.
Yep.
If you are interested in the TechMax event we've got next year, 21st of June, you can get tickets now. The QR code's on the screen, or it's go to www.tftmax.com. So thank you for watching tonight. Obviously, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you, obviously, Ben and Ken for joining us. It's always a pleasure having them on the show. They've always got some insightful things, and obviously Ben's got that sort of two points of view from consumer, yep, and obviously for business sales or reselling. So it's always nice to get those on there. Do you have any last thoughts, Jen?
On TechMax, if you want to attend TechMax in a way of distribution or vendors, call me. You have my phone number and my emails if you've been dealing with me over the years. Or reach out to me in an email at info@techfortex.co.k and say, take me to the max. And I will make sure that you get booked in.
That's brilliant. And we'll just say thank you for Case King for sponsoring TechMax, as well as AeroCool and Strong. But you can find more information about that on the TechFortex website, or the TechMax website, which is on the screen at the bottom at the moment. Otherwise, we'll say goodbye, everyone, and I'll leave you with this.
Are you looking for gear that delivers style, reliability and value? Then you're going to love what AeroCool has to offer. We are more than just a brand. We are a community of people who share a passion for PC gaming and hardware. Our diverse product portfolio is a reflection of our enthusiasm. We have been delivering dependable PC hardware and more in the market for over 20 years. Our customers trust and support us because of our great value products that don't compromise on quality or aesthetics. But don't just take our word for it. Come and see for yourself at our booth and check out our latest products. You will be blown away by what AeroCool has to offer.